Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 935. The Making of Donald Trump, subtitled Top Banana Republic, Part 4. This is being recorded on November 30th of the year 2016. This program is another reading from a very short, very important book about Donald Trump, published earlier this year by Pulitzer Prize-winning author David K. Johnston. K is C-A-Y, published in hardcover by Melville House, and again was published 2016, copyrighted by David K. Johnston. It presents a very detailed and yet very concise short overview of the making of Donald Trump, how the Donald, as he was called by his first wife, Ivanka, actually came into prominence. It does not go into the fascist and Nazi connections and manifestations of the Trump machine. I have done that at great length in the 10 programs called The Trump and Confabanda, as well as other shows. There will be more in the Trump and Confabanda series coming up. I think that by way of offering something of a chevron, a balance in which or by which the failures of our society and its institutions, including sadly a great many, I think most of the American people, including the 45% of the eligible voters who did not vote, could be measured. I think the failure of our political institutions, the failure in particular of our media, and again, the failure of so many individual Americans, from the 45% of eligible voters who voted to those, frankly, gullible and I think soon to be profoundly disappointed and alienated and disaffected white blue-collar workers who helped to tip the balance in favor of Trump in some key Midwestern states, what have been states that have been characterized as the Rust Belt. Well, I think this book serves as a chevron for failure, a balance in which the failure of this country and its institutions and, sadly, a great many of its individual citizens, and I should include many in the so-called progressive sector, who during the campaign once again sounded the tedious, utterly fallacious assertion that there's no difference between the Republicans and the Democrats, and we have to vote green, and we have to vote libertarian. Well, I think that the next 4 years to 8 years are going to prove brutally, and I think in many cases fatally, educational to those people. I think that Trump is essentially going to be a media and social media front person for some very powerful and insidious interests, ultimately controlled by and beholden unto what I have termed the Underground Reich, literally a Third Reich that went underground and that has now emerged above ground in this country and in many others. I will be updating the Trump and Confabanda programs again in the not-too-distant future. As I speak on November 30th of 2016, just over 3 weeks after the Truppenkampfverbande came into office, losing by a larger amount of the popular vote than any presidential candidate since 1876, but nonetheless being proclaimed by the Republican right and the corporate interests for whom they are spear carriers. This is a mandate for change. No, it isn't. But boy, there will be change. Oh, man. Is there going to be change? As I speak on November 30th, we are entering the holiday gift-giving season, and I think one could do no better than to buy this book and give it for a holiday gift. I want to emphasize yet again, I get nothing from this program. None of the stations that carry the broadcast get anything from this program. But I think that this book, quite small and readable, very well written, would make a wonderful holiday gift. And again, with no financial dog in the fight, so to speak, I recommend that people do just that. I would suggest that if people know friends and or relatives who voted for Donald Trump, get them this book. They may not read it. They may use it as a doorstop. But I think, and maybe it is way too late, and this might constitute closing the barn door long after the horse has bolted into the night, this book will make an excellent, excellent holiday gift. So please do that. Not too expensive, not too long, well worth the investment of money to buy it, and well worth the time taken to read it. Furthermore, I recommend that people who read it take information from it and disseminate it via the internet, via talk shows, via social media, what have you. And again, lest I be mistaken for engaging in commercialism, I get nothing from this. None of the stations get anything from this. This is simply a donation of time and effort for a civic and, frankly, a higher spiritual purpose. I'm going to, I think this week, begin and end the program with the reading of a poem. I have been mispronouncing, I believe, the name of an obscure Roman poet in this poem. I will endeavor to pronounce it correctly. The poem, Be Angry at the Sun, by Robinson Jeffers. That public men publish falsehoods is nothing new. That America must accept, like the historical republics, corruption and empire has been known for years. Be angry at the sun for setting, if these things anger you. Watch the wheel slope and turn. They are all bound on the wheel, these people, those warriors, this republic, Europe, Asia. Observe them gesticulating. Observe them going down. The gang serves lies. The passionate man plays his part. The cold passion for truth hunts in no pack. You are not Capellus, you know, to lampoon these crude sketches of Caesar. You are far from Dante's feet, but even farther from his dirty political hatreds. Let boys want pleasure, and men struggle for power, and women perhaps for fame, and the servile to serve a leader, and the dupes to be duped. Yours is not theirs. Amen. In the written description for this program on the SpitfireList.com website, I will be posting a short article that is from the ABC News website shortly before the election itself. An ABC News poll found that 43% of prospective voters, likely voters, felt that Donald Trump was more honest than Hillary Clinton. 36% of those likely voters polled felt that Hillary Clinton was more honest. I think there could be no better measure of just how far down this society has gone. And again, like this book itself, the failure of our institutions and the failure of our citizens. 43% felt Donald Trump, more people felt Donald Trump was more honest than Hillary Clinton. If I were to give you my most candid feelings about that, I would lose my FCC license, or at the very least, get kicked off the air, because to do so, I would have to reach into the foulest backwaters of my vocabulary. So I'm going to let that go. A couple of weeks ago, shortly after the election, Donald Trump settled a lawsuit over Trump, actually three lawsuits, over Trump University. I think in many ways, Trump University could be seen as something of a living metaphor for what we figure to get in a Trump administration. And I'm going to read as much as we have time to do in this program from chapter 15, Better Than Harvard, unquote. And I think that Trump University as a metaphor for a Trump administration or administrations, it would not surprise me if he was eventually removed from office in favor of the, quote, respectable, unquote, Michael Pence. That's like saying you have removed Frankenstein for the more respectable Count Dracula, in my opinion. But I think that there could be no... Trump University really is a living metaphor for a Trump administration or administrations. And something I will be reading in its context in a minute, talking about testimony from one of the lawsuits against Trump University, which Trump settled a couple of weeks ago for millions of dollars and then said, well, we didn't have to admit any wrongdoing and blah, blah, blah. That is the way he operates when he gets his rear end put into the shredder in a lawsuit. Speaking of one of the lawsuits against Trump University, the testimony above all comes from a 2012 suit, but two other lawsuits claimed that the whole Trump University enterprise was a fraud, a scam in which the desperate and the gullible paid Trump about $40 million for what turned out to be high-pressure salesmanship. Yeah, boy, I think the Trump administration is going to be just that. It reminds me of the last stanza of this poem. Let boys want pleasure and men struggle for power and women perhaps for fame. And the servile to serve a leader, and the dupes to be duped. Yeah, they have been. Sadly, we are all, in a sense, enrolled in Trump University. And as the old blues songs and old R&B songs used to say, we're going to get a schooling. Yep. And as people who get beaten up in a street fight are told, you know, you're going to get taught a lesson, or I taught you a lesson. Again, we are all enrolled, in a sense, at Trump University.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
In chapter 15, David K. Johnston writes in Better Than Harvard, Michael Sexton, a management consultant and for-profit education entrepreneur, wrangled a brief meeting with Donald Trump in 2004. Sexton proposed licensing Trump's name for online real estate courses similar to those periodically required for agents to maintain their licenses. Trump embraced the idea. In fact, Trump liked the idea so much that when Sexton and his associates returned to Trump Tower to close the deal, Trump announced that rather than licensing his name, Trump was going to own the company. Sexton would get a 5% ownership stake and a $250,000 annual salary to run the operation. At Trump University, we teach success, Trump said, looking into the camera in a 2005 promotional video. That's what it's all about, success. It's going to happen to you. We're going to have professors and adjunct professors that are absolutely terrific. Terrific people, terrific brains, successful. We are going to have the best of the best. These are all people that are handpicked by me, unquote. None of those statements were true. First, there was no university, unquote, neither in the commonly understood sense of the word as an institution where many branches of advanced learning take place, nor under the laws of New York, which prohibit any enterprise from using the word university in its name unless it has been so authorized by the State Education Department. Rather than any sort of campus, Trump University headquarters was located in a building at 40 Wall Street, which Trump owns. In July of 2016, Bloomberg Businessweek magazine reported that 40 Wall Street, parenthetically the address at which Trump University was headquartered, was also the address of choice for stock market swindlers, boiler room operators, and penny stock cons. According to the public alert list, which is issued by the Federal Securities and Exchange Commission to warn people away from scams, no other address hosts as many unregistered stock brokerage firms. 1 week after Trump University declared itself, New York officials ordered Trump to stop using the word university. Trump and Sexton basically ignored these demands for 5 years, though in 2010, they did change the name to the Trump Entrepreneur Initiative. Trump testified that he knew next to nothing about that and referred questions to Sexton. The faux university also did not have professors, not even part-time adjunct professors, and the, quote, faculty, unquote, as they were called, were certainly not the best of the best, unquote. They were commissioned salespeople, many with no experience in real estate. One managed a fast food joint, as Senator Marco Rubio would point out during the March 3rd Republican primary debate in 2016. Two other instructors were in personal bankruptcy while collecting fees from would-be Trump University graduates eager to learn how to get rich. Trump did not even honor his commitment to hand-pick the faculty. In 2012, when Trump was sued for civil fraud in California, attorney Rachel Jensen, J-E-N-S-E-N, read the names of one faculty member after another, displayed photographs of the faculty, and offered video footage of faculty at Trump University, quote, live events, unquote. Trump, who complained that this line of questioning was a waste of time, could not identify a single person. Quote, too many years ago, it's ancient history, he said. Some of these events had taken place fewer than 2 years earlier. Again and again and again, Trump testified that he could not remember. It is worth noting that Trump's memory seemed quite keen 3 years later in 2015, when he insisted that he had watched on television as thousands of Muslims in New Jersey cheered while the Twin Towers burned. No videotape, photograph, or police report has ever been found to support this memory. But Trump maintains his memory was correct. After all, as he told a 2015 campaign audience in Iowa, he is possessed of, quote, the world's greatest memory, unquote. In any event, when Jensen finally asked if Trump could name for her one good live events instructor for Trump University, Trump replied, I don't know the instructors, thereby completely contradicting his promise that he would handpick them all. Trump made another odd promise in the Trump University promotional video, quote, we're going to teach you better than the business schools are going to teach you, and I went to the best business school, he said. We're going to teach you better. I think it's going to be a better education, and it's going to teach you what you need to know. None of this was true either. The only thing close to being true was that he went to the best business school, unquote. Trump never attended the noted Wharton School at Penn, but he did enroll for 2 years in a four-year undergraduate program. Based on the testimony Trump gave Rachel Jensen in 2012, it's ludicrous to argue that Trump University offered a better education than any top business school. Trump himself acknowledged that Sexton, whom he'd put in charge of running Trump University, quote, didn't have much of a background in real estate, unquote. Trump also said he didn't remember whether Sexton had ever run a school before. It's too long ago, he said. Trump also denied knowing how much a three-day seminar cost. It was a long time ago, he testified. I don't know, unquote. When Jensen asked, quote, whether someone who's had no experience buying or selling real estate should be, quote, qualified to charge tens of thousands of dollars for a three-day real estate mentorship, Trump replied, I really can't answer. I don't know what his background is. I really don't know. Maybe he's a super genius in so many ways. I don't know. I mean, I can't tell you. I just can't tell you that, unquote. Trump also admitted that he had never reviewed the scripts that were provided to the live events instructors. Quote, I don't believe so, no, he testified. Clearly, Trump could not vouch for the value of the lectures, which both government investigators and students seeking refunds described as scripts of polished, high-pressure sales tactics of little to no educational value. The testimony, above all, comes from a 2012 suit, but two other lawsuits claimed that the whole Trump University enterprise was a fraud, a scam in which the desperate and the gullible paid Trump about $40 million for what turned out to be high-pressure salesmanship. In the 2013 case, New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman said the three-day Trump University seminar, which cost $1,497, promised access to a special, quote, database, unquote, of lenders. What it actually offered was a list that traced back to the Scotsman Guide, a monthly magazine I accessed for free on the Internet. New York was not the only state where authorities suspected Trump University was a con. In Texas, undercover state consumer fraud agents attended many of the 57 free Trump University seminars held over 7 months. They later compiled a report. Among the investigators' findings was that students who attended a next-level seminar, quote, are taught to prey upon homeowners in financial turmoil and to target foreclosure properties, unquote. They were also instructed on the first morning of the 3-day course, quote, to call their credit card companies, banks, and mortgage companies and ask for an increase or extension of credit so that they may finance the Gold Elite package purchase. Defendant Trump Yu will even ask attendees to call their bank during these one-on-one sessions while the representative waits. The primary goal of the 3-day seminars appears to be more high-pressure sales tactics in an attempt to induce them into purchasing Defendant Trump Yu's Gold Elite package for $35,000. The Consumer Protection investigators also reported that what Trump University taught, quote, is out of date, inapplicable to the Texas real estate market, and generally of little practical value. Moreover, the so-called strategies that are taught are highly speculative and may be tantamount to encouraging attendees to sell real estate without a license, which is illegal in Texas, unquote. The state report also said that the sales agents posing as faculty, quote, falsely assert at these free workshops that the classes are approved continuing education credit for realtors, unquote, even though they were not approved at all. Finally, calling the operation a university violated the Texas law similar to the one in New York. Trump University had not even obtained a required Texas license and had not registered to pay sales tax as mandated by state law. Sexton later testified that the taxes were eventually paid. To the seasoned fraud investigators who compiled the report, the case against Trump seemed ironclad. The investigators concluded with the suggestion that Trump, who to solicit customers signed letters that said, quote, I can turn anyone into a successful real estate investor, including you, be named personally in a civil action suit alleging deceptive trade practices. We know all this because John Owens, who retired in 2011 as chief deputy in the Texas Attorney General's Consumer Protection Unit, made the internal report public in 2016. The Texas Attorney General's office, Owens' former employer, responded with a letter citing 6 laws Owens may have broken in releasing the report and suggesting his law license might be revoked. Very interesting, this last paragraph again. We know all this because John Owens, who retired in 2011 as chief deputy in the Texas Attorney General's Consumer Protection Unit, made the internal report public in 2016. The Texas Attorney General's office, Owens' former employer, responded with a letter citing 6 laws that Owens may have broken in releasing the report and suggesting his law license might be revoked. The documents Owens released included an analysis of the defenses Trump could be expected to argue if the matter went to court and why the staff felt he would lose. Owens also released a January 2010 letter signed by Rick Berlin, an assistant Texas Attorney General, proposing that the state demand restitution for the Texans who felt swindled, as well as further penalties for deceptive and illegal conduct. In all, Berlin recommended demanding $5.4 million and a permanent order banning Trump and his fake university forever from ever doing business in Texas again. Greg Abbott, the Texas Attorney General, who parenthetically issued the warning to Owens and is now the governor of Texas, I believe, took no public action. Again, Greg Abbott, the then the Texas Attorney General, now governor of Texas, took no public action. After Owens made the internal report public, state officials put their own spin on the decision not to demand restitution or file a public action. They insisted that Abbott had actually scored a win for Texas by not following his staff's advice. Abbott, correct, has since been elected governor of Texas. He endorsed Trump in 2016. Abbott's office has said he had done his job enforcing what it characterized as a bad business to leave Texas. Abbott has not explained the reasons he would endorse for president someone who ran a business so crooked he ran it out of the state. It could not be determined whether Trump moved on under threat of action by Abbott, or simply because he decided the Texas market for Trump University's offerings had been exhausted. No documentation was provided to either effect. In 2013, 3 years after Berlin failed to persuade Abbott to adopt his recommendation to recover money for Texas consumers, Trump donated $35,000 to Abbott's campaign for governor. A much shorter time period between campaign gift and official inaction occurred in Florida. On September 13th of the same year, Florida's Attorney General Pam Bondi, B-O-N-D-I, announced that her office was considering joining the New York Attorney General in investigating Trump University as a possible fraud. That week, a $25,000 check from the Donald J. Trump Foundation was delivered to Attorney General Pam Bondi's reelection campaign organization and Justice for All. Ivanka Trump also sent a personal check donating $500 to support Bondi's reelection. On September 17th, Bondi announced that her office would not join the New York fraud investigation, citing a lack of evidence and claiming her office had received only a single complaint. Both Bondi, a lawyer, and Trump would have known that many would consider it improper for an attorney general to accept campaign money from the subject of a possible fraud investigation. In fact, on the last day of June of 2016, Trump himself denounced Loretta Lynch, the Attorney General of the U.S., for having a half-hour conversation with former President Bill Clinton during a chance encounter on the Phoenix Airport tarmac. The two should not have spoken at all, Trump said, because the Federal Bureau of Investigation was still probing Hillary Clinton's use of a private email server when she was Secretary of State. "Who would do this?" Trump demanded. "I just think it's so terrible. I think it's so horrible," unquote. Trump pointed out that he was campaigning against a rigged system. The Phoenix meeting was, quote, "evidence of a rigged system," he said. He made no comment about his own investigation in Florida or his substantial campaign donation to Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi. Contrary to Bondi's claim, there had been more than one Florida complaint about Trump's education business when reporter Scott Maxwell asked the Florida Attorney General's office for all records of complaints regarding Trump's education enterprises in 2013. He received 8,491 pages of records. The documents showed that Bondi, like Bill McCollum, her predecessor, had turned away many pleas for help. Citizens, some of them quite elderly, were told to complain to some other government agency or file a lawsuit on their own. One man said the $26,000 he paid for a Trump education drove him into bankruptcy. There were also complaints that there was no practical way to get a refund because the Trump offices in Boca Raton had closed. Trump's Florida operation was run by Michael and Irene Millen, M-I-L-L-I-N. The Millens had done quite well for themselves, like Donald Trump. They were once featured on the syndicated television show Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. They were also a couple well known to fraud investigators across the country as marketers of get-rich-quick schemes. They were the subject of complaints about offices that closed suddenly, leaving employees and suppliers unpaid. Their pricey seminars claiming people could borrow vast sums at no interest and qualify for big government grants drew action by attorneys general in 34 states. Among them was none other than Greg Abbott when he was the top law enforcement official in Texas. Why Trump would associate with the Millens is a question thus far unasked during presidential debates and campaign events. The learning about the couple's dubious record in business would not have required a lengthy or expensive background investigation. A simple internet search would have done the trick. Furthermore, Congress prohibits charities, including Trump's private foundation, from making any political contributions like the one he made to Bondi's campaign. For both Trump and Bondi, the cashing of that check opens the prospect of prosecution for felonies. In June of 2016, a Boston lawyer named Whitfield Larrabee, L-A-R-R-A-B-E-E, asked federal prosecutors to seek indictments of Bondi and Trump for bribery. Quote, "If it looks like a bribe and quacks like a bribe, I think it's a bribe," Larrabee said. The explanation offered by Trump's foundation will likely induce utter disbelief from people who run charitable foundations or who work in their grant-making departments. It will also raise the eyebrows of any experienced public corruption prosecutor. Grant-making foundations are required to disclose the names of their recipients in an annual report to the IRS known as Form 990. That document is signed just like your personal income tax return under penalty of perjury. The Trump Foundation Form 990 for 2013 makes no mention of a donation to Bondi's campaign arm and Justice for All. However, it does show a $25,000 gift to a charity with a slightly different name, Justice for All. Justice for All is located in Wichita, Kansas. That organization, whose charitable mission is training anti-abortion organizers, said it did not receive a penny from Trump's foundation. Alan Weisselberg, W-E-I-S-S-E-L-B-E-R-G, who is both the Trump Organization chief financial officer and treasurer of Donald Trump's charitable foundation, blamed the failure to properly report the gift on a typographical error, a heavy burden for a mistyped letter or two to bear, especially when it turned out that the actual $25,000 check was made out to a group with the same name as the Bondi campaign, this one with a Utah address. the Utah charity had not gotten any Trump money either. According to Weisselberg, the same staff work on Trump's business and on his foundation. He told the Washington Post that an unnamed clerk received a request for payment from Bondi's organization and Justice for All. If true, that means Bondi solicited Trump when he and his faux educational organization were under investigation for fraud. Even more astonishing was the statement and Justice for All treasurer Nancy Watkins made to the Tampa Bay Times in 2013. She said Bondi's campaign was, quote, comfortable with the propriety of the contribution from the Trump Foundation, unquote. While no one involved felt anything was wrong in Florida, Trump had a very different view of what happened in a federal court case in California where people sued him and Trump University as a fraud. His answers to lawyer Jensen's questions were made public at the request of numerous news organizations. Those requests were filed with Judge Gonzalo Curiel, C-U-R-I-E-L, the federal judge overseeing two of the fraud cases in San Diego. The day that Judge Curiel made the testimony available, Trump went on the attack. Quote, I have a judge who is a hater of Donald Trump, a hater. He is not doing the right thing, Trump said, inadvertently sparking a debate over whether he would respect the independence of the judiciary as president. Trump made no mention of the judge's decision to make some of the material in the fraud case public, a dot that many news reports did not connect. Trump instead suggested an investigation of, quote, the judge who happens to be Mexican, unquote. Judge Curiel, a former federal prosecutor, was born in Indiana and graduated from law school there. The next day, Trump continued his attack on the judge's heritage. I'm building the wall, unquote, Trump said of his proposed barrier between the U.S. and Mexico. I have a Mexican judge. He's of Mexican heritage. He should have recused himself not only for that, for other things, unquote, parenthetically. Remember that in the recitation, in our reading of Trump's relationship with Joey Weisselbaum, a convicted drug trafficker and major felon whom Trump employed in a number of different capacities, there was a very curious change of venue for the sentencing of Joey Weisselbaum. It was moved to New Jersey, where it was originally to be heard by his older sister, Judge Marion Trump Berry. She recused herself weeks later. Her husband, among others, had taken rides in Joey Weisselbaum's helicopters operated for the Trump Organization, but it already had created a situation in which the subsequent judges would be aware that finding that being too harsh could impugn the integrity of the judiciary. Continuing with this account, Trump's comments prompted the National Review, an influential conservative political magazine that opposes Trump, to mock him. It turns out that Donald Trump's legal philosophy, such as it is like his philosophy of everything else. Donald Trump likes judges who like Donald Trump, unquote. As of July of 2016, Trump has sought to keep the public from seeing the rest of the court record requested by news organizations, especially the video of lawyer Jensen questioning him under oath. Simultaneously, he derides the fraud allegations as nonsense and declares that he was winning in all three court cases, yet he fears the video of his deposition. Trump's lawyers have argued that releasing the video of his testimony, quote, serves no legitimate purpose in the litigation and will only taint, unquote, future jurors should the case go to trial. Release of the video would cause extreme prejudice, unquote, that will, quote, imperil, unquote, Trump's right to a fair civil trial. This court should not let the judicial process be abused in this way, unquote. Meanwhile, Trump was embroiled in new problems he created for himself and his foundation, problems that put a number of charities helping military veterans at risk of losing their tax-exempt status. We're going to move directly to Chapter 16 of The Making of Donald Trump. We won't have time to read the whole chapter in this program. However, one of the groups that voted for Donald Trump was veterans and also military, active duty military personnel also favored Donald Trump. Again, be careful what you wish for. You may get it. Many veterans felt that Donald Trump's promise not to engage in wars of regime change was promising. Certainly, it is a wonderful promise. I agree with it. However, no one familiar with Donald Trump's track record would take any promise he made at face value. And I think that both the veterans and active duty military service personnel should examine the behavior of Trump charities in connection with his promise. Also, take a look at his attack on the parents of a Muslim American military officer who was killed in action in Iraq.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
In the chapter Trump Charities, chapter 16 of The Making of Donald Trump, we read, Liberty House, a small veterans charity in New Hampshire, received a call from the Trump campaign on February 5th, 2016, the day before the first primary vote in the nation for the 2016 election. Keith Howard, an Army veteran who runs the charity, said he was asked to come to a Trump rally in Londonderry, New Hampshire, on Monday, the day before the vote, to accept a $100,000 donation from Trump. Howard declined. It was not that his veterans support group could not use the money, which was equal to a third of their annual budget, and it was not that they disliked Trump or preferred another candidate either. Howard declined because it is illegal for charities to participate in partisan politics. I told them it would endanger our status as a charitable organization, Howard told me. I said we couldn't do it, unquote. He was right, but while he passed on the opportunity to lend his charity's name in support of Trump, others did not. The campaign continued to engage charities in ways that helped Trump, but that jeopardized the organization's ability to receive tax-deductible donations, which are strictly regulated by Congress. Eventually, Liberty House did get the promised money, which came not from Trump, but from a wealthy resident of Trump Tower. during another campaign event in Iowa, less than 2 weeks before the call to Keith Howard, Trump announced a drive to, quote, raise some money for the vets, unquote. Trump and his campaign said more than $6 million was raised on the spot. But when journalists from a number of organizations asked which veterans groups could expect to benefit from the fundraiser, they received no answers. Parenthetically, by the way, Donald Trump received 4 exemptions from the draft. He was in Vietnam War generation. He supposedly had problems with his foot. He couldn't remember which foot it was. So, in and of himself, Donald Trump represents or embodies the chicken hawks wing of the Republican Party, who love to go to war, love to be photographed with the troops. Trump is appointing, or at least considering appointing, many generals to cabinet positions. And yet when it was time for him to serve in Vietnam, he got exemptions. Beginning again with this last paragraph, during another campaign event in Iowa less than 2 weeks before the call to Keith Howard, Trump announced a drive to, quote, raise some money for the vets, unquote. Trump and his campaign said more than $6 million was raised on the spot, but when journalists from a number of organizations asked which veterans groups could expect to benefit from the fundraiser, they received no answers. 4 months passed with no evidence that any money had been distributed. Just before the Washington Post ran a story about where the money had or hadn't gone, Trump had sent checks to veterans groups by overnight delivery. A few days later, he announced he had turned over $5.6 million, including $1 million of his own money to veterans, and his campaign handed out a list of the recipients. Trump used the questions about the distributions to lambaste journalists generally and called one reporter a sleaze. The press should be ashamed of themselves, Trump said. Instead of being showered with unqualified praise, Trump complained he was asked for evidence that the donated money was actually going to veterans' charities. He was also asked why the amount raised was about $1.5 million less than the $6 million campaign manager Corey Lewandowski had quoted at the time. The response was that not everyone fulfilled his or her pledges. An interesting answer, since a charitable pledge is a legally enforceable obligation if made in writing, and it is standard practice for charities to get pledges in writing. Journalists had good reason to ask where the charity dollars were, given Trump's long history of promising donations and no public record of them actually being made. For example, Donald Trump often boasts about his education at the University of Pennsylvania. But despite his penchant for putting his name on buildings and flaunting what he says is his immense wealth, there are no buildings bearing the Trump name on the Philadelphia campus. There are no lecture halls, no classrooms, no line of books on the library shelf, not even a chair with the Trump name. His name does not even appear in annual listings of donors that Penn, like nearly all colleges, publishes in brochures and other materials sent to graduates and supporters. Of course, it could be, as Trump himself has said, that he prefers to make donations privately without his name attached. When The Art of the Deal was published in 1987, Trump publicly promised that all royalties would go to help the homeless, Vietnam veterans, and people with AIDS and multiple sclerosis. The book sold so well, it was a number one New York Times bestseller, that Trump said he expected to give away at least $4 million. Long ago I asked about that. The Trump Organization did not return any of my calls with an answer. Trump has since said that he eventually gave the money to his foundation, though his total gifts to it since its creation in the same year that the book came out have come out to less than $2 million. And that really embodies, I think, of what Trump is all about. Again, said he's going to help Vietnam veterans. Well, maybe he could have helped them a whole lot more if he had enlisted or allowed himself to be drafted and provided a little bit of covering fire in a battle for those who were engaged in combat, but then that's not the way he operates. Again, I think in many ways we are all enrolled in Trump University, from the chapter about that. The testimony above all comes from a 2012 suit, but two other lawsuits claimed that the whole Trump University enterprise was a fraud, a scam, in which the desperate and the gullible paid Trump about $40 million for what turned out to be high-pressure salesmanship. Indeed, we will conclude this program. And again, bear in mind that in an ABC News poll shortly before the election, 43% felt that Donald Trump was the more honest of the candidates. Only 36% felt that Hillary Clinton was. We will conclude this program with yet another reading of the poem, Be Angry at the Sun by Robinson Jeffers. The public men publish falsehoods is nothing new. That America must accept, like the historical republics, corruption and empire has been known for years. Be angry at the sun for setting if these things anger you. Watch the wheel slope and turn. They are all bound on the wheel, these people, those warriors, this republic, Europe, Asia. Observe them gesticulating. Observe them going down. The gang serves lies. The passionate man plays his part. The cold passion for truth hunts in no pack. You are not Catullus, you know, to lampoon these crude sketches of Caesar. You are far from Dante's feet, but even farther from his dirty political hatreds. Let boys want pleasure and men struggle for power and women perhaps for fame and the servile to serve a leader and the dupes to be duped. Yours is not theirs. This concludes For the Record program number 935, The Making of Donald Trump, subtitled Top Banana Republic, Part 5. This is being recorded on November 30th of the year 2016. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.